Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome, welcome everyone. This, of course, is Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're going to have a lot of fun today. The thing that makes me most confident that the afterlife is altogether real is the simple fact that the study of it has all the aspects of a genuine science. Newly discovered facts fit together in unexpected ways with previously discovered facts, and then you find some wrinkle in traditional science or something else comes up, and that fits in elsewhere. Little things that you didn't even think were going to be important turn out to be important. It is a real science. Bit by bit, you assemble a whole new reality in which everything fits. It's extraordinary how well it fits. By now, researchers are used to the fact that this area of research is a whole new science, and we know that each new detail, that if it's real, is going to fit in somewhere. It begins to be old hat to us, but it shouldn't be. The wonder and the privilege of being part of making discoveries that even a century from now, people will still be building on. And eventually people will look back on with frank wonder that it took us until the 21st century to figure all this out. Well, doing all of that is beyond joyous. Wow. Now we know how people like Sir Isaac Newton and Galileo Galilei must have felt. How can humankind have been so clueless for so long? Personally, I've always assumed that eventually I was going to write a book about all these amazing discoveries. I even had a title. I was going to call it The Fun of Figuring It Out. But then I read David Burfoot's amazing book, Finding the Elephant, in which he talks about figuring it out so well that I consider my book to have already been written and written much better than I could have done. David was our guest some months back, but we hardly began to really talk about this book, and I want you to know more of what he knows because it's so important for your understanding of everything else. So David Burfoot is back with us again today, all the way from Australia. Welcome, David. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Thanks, Roberta. I'm happy to be here. Thanks very much.
Because some people may not have heard your earlier podcast, tell us briefly again why this area interests you and how you got into it. Just briefly.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, I was working all around the world in different jobs in mostly social projects, but also, you know, I had an interest in physics and I studied a lot in those areas while I was at university as well as sociology. And I had this idea that, we could create a documentary where we bring all these people together from all sorts of disciplines and really nut out the big questions of life. And so I started to do some research to see if it's possible, to see if all these disciplines can come together. And after about a couple of years of researching, I realized that it was possible. But then suddenly I actually had a book, and I thought, people got to know about this stuff. They need to see how all this stuff fits together.
Yes.
So then I went ahead with the book. And then all of a sudden, it was there. Well, not all of a sudden. It took about 5 years, but it all came together in the end. And, the metaphor of the six blind men and the elephant was a good one to bring together all the different ways of looking at the world to show how it can actually be complementary.
Well, you've actually been much kinder to the various aspects than I've been. I also have used Finding the Elephant, the six blind men and the elephant repeatedly to help people understand what doing this research is like. And for people who don't know the story, just briefly, I call it six blindfolded men. Doesn't matter. They're trying to appreciate an elephant. And, you know, one of them says, oh, it's like a sail, and he's holding on to the ear. And another one says, oh, it's more like a hose, he's got the trunk. Maybe somebody else says, oh, it's really more like a spear, he's touching a tusk. I almost said antler. Someone said it's a wall. Well, of course, he's just touching the side of the elephant. Someone said, no, it's a tree trunk because he's got one of the legs. And somebody else said, it's a rope. Well, he's got the tail. I think that's even more than six. So you see the problem. If we're only looking in one way, and that's feeling one specific area with our hands or seeing one specific area and blocking out the rest, we don't know what we're dealing with here. And that's the problem we have in trying to understand reality. And what David has done, and what I've done as well, only I've only done it for myself, what he's done for you as a gift to you is to go through this and put it together. And he's done a beautiful job, an excellent job. I'm asking him today, we'll talk a little bit more about some words he's going to be using and before we actually get into it. But I've been asked him today to talk specifically about two major areas. One is quantum mechanics and all its aspects and how it fits in, and the other is consciousness. Both of those are problems that scientists have a lot of trouble dealing with, but there's information to come from those studying other parts of this greater reality elephant. There's information that would help them if only they were interested. Those of us who are doing research in the greater reality, which includes, of course, the study of death and the afterlife, but a whole lot else, those of us who are doing this research are in a position where we have to, nobody takes us seriously, so we've got to pull information from all these sources, and it comes together and it makes a great new science. Now, we don't have enough time for him to tell you everything that is in his book. I urge you to read Finding the Elephant. You can find it on Amazon, and it's going to allow you to know some things which you could never find out otherwise. But before we really get into it, I'd like David just to tell us some definitions of his. The way he writes his book is very easy to read, but you need to know some definitions. So let's talk about those. What are mega phenomena, David?
Mega phenomena are things that you can't see through one discipline alone, but you need to bring together conventional disciplines to see it in its full form, if you like. One example is, during the 18th century, we had lots of phenomena of meteorites, and during that time, science was in a special time where it was. It was an enlightenment where it was casting doubt on anything that didn't seem rational. And so meteorites were just thought of by the scientific community as superstition. It wasn't until the study of meteorites and the study of meteorology, which is ironically the study of weather, came together, and they realized that meteorites didn't actually come from the sky, they came from space. And so they had to bring two disciplines together to understand the phenomenon.
Right.
When they did, all the superstition went away, and it was become, a bit of a, more of a science. But before they knew about these two areas of science and put them together, meteorites were just superstition.
Yeah, and this is especially important when we're dealing with two different fields altogether. Talk about what some of the areas are. We've got science, and there's a lot going on in science, which we use for our own purposes because there are areas that the scientists just don't understand. But what else? Where else have you looked for information to construct what you know?
So I went through biology, of course, physics, sociology, as well as religion, afterlife research. But the things that you want to talk about today, say quantum physics. Quantum physics is the study of very minute particles, and it looks at how life in the universe exists at a very microscopic level. And there's particular bits of research about that that's casting new lights about how reality is constructed. Now, one of the things that people might want to look up one day is a really strangely named test called the Delayed Choice Quantum Eraser. And basically, it's a test by two famous researchers, Wheeler and Kim, which shows that consciousness plays a key role in collapsing energy and potentialities into matter. So, basically, the matter that we experience, the hard things in our life that we touch and feel, really it's there partly because of our ability to perceive it. It's quite an amazing kind of thing to be able to talk about. But basically, what it happens is that the way in which energy manifests into solid things relies on our perception. And our subjective experience of it, which is a game changer for a lot of people.
Right, that's right.
And so it's something that's not intuitive. It's something that is not something that we are used to knowing about or conceptualizing, but it's a basic core of our reality. The second thing I think that's really interesting for people to know, and it's something that Einstein and one of our Australian Nobel Prize winners in physics here, Brian Smith, research is basically that space and time are manufactured and malleable. They're even virtual. So they originate from another dimension. They're not the absolutes of the universe. There's even mathematics around black holes that support that the space-time really is a hologram. Now, space and time, when I talk about space and time reality, I'm talking about, you know, the everyday reality we experience where something can only be in one place at one time.
Right.
But the more we find out about space and what makes up space-time reality, we find out that it's actually a virtual reality. It's not. It's a projection from another reality. It's not actually the real thing that we experience.
Right. Right. It's all fascinating. I think it's important for people to understand what this was, what a revelation this was to afterlife researchers, because we were coming to know a lot from the people who are already there about what it's like in the afterlife, and it made no sense to us. I mean, you can go from one place to another, and even if it's across the entire universe and it takes no time at all, the way people communicated was all telepathic. People could create things just by thinking them into existence, and they would shimmer into existence. I mean, none of this made sense to us until we started to get good Quantum Physics for Dummies books in the early part of this century. And suddenly we realized what we were dealing with were quantum phenomena. Don't you agree that that was an extraordinary a gift to us? Quantum mechanics suddenly made things make sense that never had made sense before.
Yeah, and it was, and yes, and basically it shows that these things that you're speaking of, these capacities, these experience of life in the afterlife, are probably a closer approximation to what absolute existence is, rather
yes.
than what we experience it here in our everyday life. But
yes.
you see the signs in all sorts of research. That shows that what they experience in the afterlife is possible here, but to a lesser degree, but it is still showing signs that it's possible.
Yes.
I mean, we've got, you know, things like entanglement, which shows that things can be in two places at the same time.
Yes.
And that was, you know, just kind of put forward by Einstein and his colleagues some years ago. And it's been proven ever since by different tests and different experiments that it's actually
It happens,
true.
Yes, right. Yeah. Now, and here's another one, subspace. What's your definition for subspace?
So subspace is what I term, is a term that comes from science fiction, but I find it useful because people kind of get it because they understand, you know, science fiction programs like Star Trek and so forth. So basically it's that other dimension where space and time don't serve as the same barriers as they do here. This is the dimension where it could be for people who, it could be the afterlife, it could be heaven, it could be the dream time for the Australian Aborigines. It's that level of existence which is beyond our space-time reality that
yes.
That, you know, that area that we exist, which is not restricted by space time.
And what I love the way you put it. You said that in your book at one point you said this is the place where science and spirituality peacefully coexist. I think that's how you put it, which is what we need because they're battling one another. And actually, people doing afterlife research and in other aspects of spirituality and people doing what they call hard science are really trying to understand the same reality. There's no earthly reason that we need to assume only one is right, because as you point out, a lot of what we're trying to understand needs insights from both sides. And I thought that was really profound. All right, one more term, triangulation.
Okay, so triangulation is the kind of thing that you do. It comes from navigation, where you look at three points, and you look at trying to find out where you are by examining a number of points of view. So triangulation in this book is basically saying, okay, if we bring all the different disciplines together, what are the commonalities with them? What are they all kind of pointing to? What are the bits of truth that we can extract from all the different perspectives? So it's like finding the elephant, if you like, in the metaphor.
Yes.
Of the six blind men and the elephant. It's like finding that little spot where they all seem to agree on.
Yeah, this is what this book is doing. It's taking all these things, and it talks about them in much more detail than I would have. That's one of the great things about this book. You don't have to have a level of understanding of these fields in order to get to where he's trying to go, because he gives you a short course in so many things in just simple, simple language. But the beauty of it is that you can see, oh yeah, I do see how that fits, how it's useful to understand quantum mechanics, how this other aspect of science is giving us information, and how it fits with what the dead are telling us. It's just such an adventure. That's what I get drunk on it sometimes, the thrill of finding new things that fit. It doesn't happen as often now, but when you do this work, the best part is finding something new that fits the tapestry. You found another piece that makes the puzzle come real. And we have enough pieces now that it is possible to come have a pretty good understanding of what's going on. I have to tell you about a little wrinkle, though, which I think you make it much more understandable than most do, David. But when we come to Earth, we aren't even sure, maybe 10% of our minds accessible to us. We strip down to a very simplified version of our great eternal minds, which are, of course, are part of the mind that continuously manifests this universe. So it's hard to understand a lot of this stuff in a way that is real. It's sort of like your dog trying to figure out what you're doing when you're getting ready for work and why you come and go. We just don't have a frame of reference even to understand it. But you do a much better job than most, David, of making it accessible to people and helping them make sense on that sort of dog level of what's really going on. I'm appreciative of that.
Oh, thank you very much, Roberta.
Now, what surprised you most as you were doing this research? Is there any one thing that sticks out?
Well, I think the thing that we don't get, understand and appreciate, and we just don't see it because we're living so fast in our everyday life, is just the everyday things that show how profound our life is and how different our life is than we might think. One of the best examples, I think, is just our ability to be aware of a clump of time at once. So our ability just to share this moment is an absolute puzzle. Nobody in science is able to understand why this happens. There's no explanation for this. In physics, there is no explanation for why we appreciate one clump of time at a time. It's amazing. Like, there is no understanding. So consciousness, this is our link into consciousness and our link into the ultimate universe, if you like. And you can see the effect of this awareness, if you like, of one moment in time in our lives. I mean, it enables us to do all sorts of fantastic things. It enables us to interfere with the domino effect of the Big Bang. Instead of everything just cascading as one reaction and against another since the Big Bang, we are able to bring our awareness into the moment and change things.
Two things I'd like to spend the rest of our time together talking about. One of them is time, because this guarantees to blow your mind, and the other is the very fact that you have a mind to be blown. These are things that scientists cannot explain, and they try to cover it up in various ways, but they have no idea how time works, and they have no idea how your awareness works, how your consciousness works. But the thing to understand about time is that it doesn't exist objectively. We think of time as something that, you know, you've got to watch. I'm looking at a timer here. Yeah, you know, it seems to be working. Well, you know, there's no such thing as time. It's an artifact of this material reality and nothing more than that. So talk a little bit about time, David.
Okay, so yeah, as you said, time is one of the things that are manufactured from with space. Space comes time. Space is being happening all the time. It's been created all the time. It's spilling into our universe, if you like, all the time from another one. And it's basically accounting for why all the planets are moving away from us faster than light itself. So sooner or later, it's going to become a very cold place in our universe. We are, because we won't see the planets and see the stars the same way we do now, because they're going to be further away. It's because space is being created between us. It's not because they're going faster than the speed of light. It's because so much space is being created between us. So it's coming from somewhere else. Time is coming from somewhere else. And we have an experience of time as going from the present into the future. But we know, and this has been supported by a lot of evidence, including, you know, Stephen Hawking's work.
Yes.
And Spielberg, actually. You're right. They're both of them do this. They basically talk about time a lot. But basically, we think about time going in one direction. But in actual fact, what we know now is that time can go, like, causality, things that when one thing comes after another, the things that cause action, things that cause change, go back in time and forward in time. So the future has a controlling effect on our present, and the past isn't as set as we like to think it is. It's created, yes, partly as a result of our observation.
This is so
Stephen
important.
Hawking once said, our past, like our future, is indefinite and exists only in a spectrum of possibilities. The universe,
yes,
according to quantum physics, has no single past or single history. We create history by our observation rather than history creating us.
Yeah, this is fascinating. So can I just jump in and say, here are some things we know from studying the afterlife evidence that make this make maybe a little more sense. When past life regressions are done, so that, which is not uncommon to help people fix phobias and things in their present lives, it then was discovered they can do future progressions, and you can find something in a future life that is affecting the present. There really is not any objective time. We're told by the dead, the upper level dead, that in fact all our lives are happening at the same time and are influencing one another. So I have this, David, I have this thought that maybe as humankind advances, we're going to make the past better and better, and there will be one day in non-time, we will discover that none of those awful things ever happened at all. We will come together as one people in perfect peace and harmony, and none of the past that's so horrendous ever will have happened. What do you think?
That's amazing. Well, Roberta, one of the things I don't talk about too much, because I just don't think people are ready for it, but I don't think people are ready for it, and we're about to go into this kind of new phase of understanding about what reality is. I think we're going to get there, but it's going to mean that we're going to have to confront some of the incorrect assumptions that we have, including,
yes,
that we can't. There's nothing we can do about the past, and there's nothing we can that time, it just goes in one direction. One of the things that the research suggests is that we are able to, we may be able to, as a conscious being, affect out the history as much as the future, and we may be able to do that as humanity, but also as individually. And it's that kind of change in thinking that this new realm of, I guess, we're going to have to get used to. It's going to be change on that scale. And what you're talking about there is that kind of change, where we can actually, where people can actually get the idea that the history isn't as set as they think it is.
Yes.
And it's certainly probably as malleable as the future.
Yeah, fascinating. And our minds profoundly affect reality. For example, the lottery number on the anniversary of 9/11 wasn't it 911? All kinds of things. You have stories like this in your book, which are fascinating, ways in which people's minds, and even before the event, when Princess Diana died, things were happening that were being influenced by that event.
Yeah, that's the Global Consciousness Project. That's Princeton University has this project, and what they do is they have random generators, computers all around the world. And they see how the random generators, computers, are affected by what's happening in the world. And they found out that before major events that captures everybody's attention, these random generators stop becoming random. They actually can detect something's about to happen. And in the case of the 9/11, they started detecting them before they happened.
Yes.
Before they actually happened. And so we had, so our consciousness was able to, without our, you know, without our awareness, able to see what was about to happen. And then it recorded it. The random generators become less random, and then it climaxed as the events were taking place, but it started before the events started took place. So, but it happens that, you know, the 9/11, it happened that, you know, things like Princess Diana's death, where at big global catastrophes, they've been able to show it happens.
Well, what's fascinating about this, because people say, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, one thing we need to understand is when we come to Earth, our minds are extremely powerful and much more vast than we can imagine, and all part of the great eternal mind that continuously manifests this universe. But we come here the way you strip down to go to the gym. We strip down to a very limited subset of our mind. We can't access most of it from where we are. But our mind is in eternity, right? There's no time there. So our mind can, we think of it as our subconscious, it's really our superconscious. Our mind can know things and can let us know on a subconscious level those things are happening and can influence things on Earth when we look at the collective way in which all these things are influencing our very limited Earth mind. So it, all of this comes together and it makes sense. And I'll be frank, it is only in the study of what David talks about, it's only in the study of what we call the study of the greater reality, that everything does make sense. There are so many things that we're confused about until we look at what science tells us. And frankly, scientists do not have a clue about many things, specifically consciousness. They cannot tell you why it is that you're aware, and they believe, against all evidence, against all rationality, that somehow your temporary meat brain generates who you are. Talk about that, David.
Well, I think probably it's a good thing to remind people that that there are things called cognitive biases, and it happens to everybody. So we've got about 100. Science has detected about 120 of them, and it means that people kind of see things in the way they like to see them, or they've been trained to see them. And it's is more of it, and that's why we're not seeing the elephant, because everybody's so fixed on the way they see the world, and they interpret everything according to the way in which their experience and the way in which they've been taught. And it actually blinds people to new evidence. It blinds people to new facts, that anything that changes their idea of the preconceived idea of the world, it can blind them to that. And this is what's happening to all the different disciplines. And actually, it's something that we should be careful of right now, because with social media, what's happening is that Google and all these different software companies, they're creating our social experience that's tailor-made for us. And the problem is these days, what's happening is that we're only now mixing with people who are being introduced to us, who have a similar idea,
yes,
which is a good thing. But what happens is it's reducing our ability to hear from people who have different ideas. So when you go into social media, Google's algorithms are actually making sure you're coming in contact with people who have similar ideas. And that's not actually helping us find the elephant. One thing that we need to do to counteract our biases is to listen to people with different ideas. And that comes from all sides. So that's something we have to be careful of. That with this new technology that we have, we don't lose our contacts with people with different ideas. It's probably why we haven't found the elephant now, but technology has that potential of maybe reducing our ability to hear different perspectives.
That's a great point. And I would just add that the scientists have another problem, which is that in the early part of the 20th century, at the time that they were being stymied and confounded by quantum mechanics when we were getting excellent communications from people we used to think were dead. And the scientists didn't want to deal with that, so they established materialism as the fundamental scientific dogma. So there are some fields where it isn't just that you have confirmation bias because all your friends think the way you do, but it's also that there are some fields of knowledge which are regulated. Nobody can think outside that field, because if you do, you don't get published or you don't get to have a good career. And all of that is really in the way now, because science has dead-ended at this point. They're not it's hard to realize this unless you do a lot of reading, but I do a lot of reading in the scientific field and certainly popular science, and they're really stymied. One of the things they're confident of is that eventually their artificial intelligence will become aware or become conscious, which is nonsense. That's like expecting your television is going to start generating new shows. That's not how it works. But we're going to get there, don't you think, David? At some point there'll be a sudden shock to science. I think it's going to be when we get good communications from people we used to think were dead, and Albert Einstein is going to say to them, "What are you people thinking?" Effectively, he'll say that, but he might say it in German.
Absolutely. I think, a lot of people do think that with change in the technology, artificial intelligence, it is going to be a big change for us. But one of the things it's also going to do is show us exactly what humanity is and what the computers can't do.
Yes.
And I think that, that's a potential, and we just have to make sure that stays that way. We don't let the computers take over, but we also search for what it is to be human along the way, with how our ability to get computer programs to act like they're human.
I've been having a lovely time today talking with David Burfoot, and I hope you're getting some of this and coming to understand just how exciting it is when we finally put it all together and it all makes sense. Now, understand, we're using very limited subsets of our conscious minds to do this, and therefore we're going to learn a lot more once we get to where we're going. But the more you learn about what's really going on and how it all supports the truth that our minds are eternal by definition, you cannot die, it's not possible. Once you really get that, it does change everything in your entire life. So my guest today is David Burfoot, and he may have a few thoughts he wants to share with us before we begin to wrap this up. So what do you want people to take away from this conversation, David?
Well, there's a few things. One is that to understand that, I guess, that everybody has a different perspective on life. We all have our different experiences, and we've all got something to contribute to our communal understanding of reality. So this has happened throughout our history. People who are not considered experts all of a sudden discover something that changes the world, whether
That's
it's
right.
Someone like Einstein, who wasn't a lecturer or didn't work for universities at the time he had his amazing discoveries, to Darwin, who wasn't even in universities himself, but also people, who are everyday people like you and me, who do some strange things like, what's his name? There's a fellow who invented sticky tape. His name was Andrew Richard Dew. I mean, that's probably one of the most amazingly useful things in the world. I think that's probably the best invention of all time. And he was a high school dropout. He was someone just like you and me. He just had an idea. And I think that part of the way in which we try to make sure, I think one of the antidotes to these over-specializations, if you like, for people who just seeing the world in one way, is for everybody to get up and say, hey, I've got this idea, I've got a different way of looking at the world, and get involved in the conversation. It's changed the world. People like that have changed the world, and I think they're going to have to do so again.
I think that's a very important point. And people who are listening right now can make major contributions. I think we tend to think all the contributions have been made, or you have to have gotten a great deal of education. Neither of those things is true. As you point out, sometimes the simplest and most straightforward insights come from people who haven't. done a lot of education, maybe who just have been thinking and reading and trying to understand. That's part of what I love about this field. More and more, we're going to find that the big breakthroughs are coming in areas which are not dry science per se, but instead have an element of spirituality in them. And that has to be the case, right, David? Because it's, in essence, we are spiritual beings having a temporary physical experience. And so naturally, at the bottom, it's spiritual. What were you going to say?
Well, exactly right. I mean, some people are surprised to hear that the greatest physicist of all time, Sir Isaac Newton, considered himself more a theologian than a scientist. He wrote more on spirituality than he did on science.
Oh, don't you
love
it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a typical example. And the same is true of a lot of the innovators, whether it's Einstein, Wallace, Darwin, Mendel, Durkheim, Planck, Galileo. They were all as much spiritual people as material people.
Absolutely.
And in fact, you need probably the dual perspectives in order to understand the world that we live in and come up with innovative ideas.
Yeah, I think that I know that some scientists are insisting that Einstein was an atheist. He was quite the reverse. He didn't believe in the simplistic religious God, but he believed in the overarching intelligence. Not only believed, he'd experienced it. And that's where we're going. Where he actually was during his lifetime is where we're going now in terms of spirituality, much more sophisticated and grown up and much, much more wonderful. So, but let's talk about how people could reach you, what your website is, what's next for you.
So the website is findingtheelephant, all one word, .net. So findingtheelephant.net. And you can go on there and you can see a little bit of a video that brings the key ideas together and find out where to get the book if you need to and some other commentary from different scientists about the work that's in the book. And you can also contact me through that website if people would want to. I'm always happy to hear people's points of view and discuss, their various parts of the science with them. The invitation's open.
So, David, it's finding the elephant, right? With the ing
and
the end.
Finding the elephant.
All one word, findingtheelephant.net. And as I say, I cannot recommend this book highly enough. I've told a lot of people who have asked me questions, why don't you just read this book? Because then you'll be able to generate your own answers. This is an area where, because there really are no experts, we are all learning. We're just at different stages of our understanding. Everybody can make sense independently of what's going on, and we can all make our own contributions, which is very exciting. Are you doing another book, or what's next for you?
I'm just taking a bit of a break. I'm thinking about the next book. It's going to be it's going to be a bit of a different angle again to our understanding. But it's going to involve the afterlife, I think, definitely, because that seems to be an area that we're going to find out a lot more about in the years to come as a society. I'm still working on it, but my family are kind of a bit apprehensive about me getting involved in the music right now, and I can understand it.
Yes, yeah, that's part of the problem that we all have who are working in this field. We have families, and you have young children, right? Your children are growing up
now. Yeah, two children, one's 11, 12.
Yeah, that's the age when we're an embarrassment anyway, and you don't want to be any more of an embarrassment than that.
That's true.
It has been wonderful having you here. I'm going to ask you to come back again just so we can talk about yet more of what's going on in this wonderful book. And meanwhile, I just recommend everyone, if you're interested in trying to really understand what's going on, Finding the Elephant, go to findingtheelephant.net, contact David. He's happy to hear from you, and just help yourself to understand what's going on, because that not only is that going to make you very much happier, but it totally cancels fear. And then you can be the expert in your circle on what's really, really going on. So thank you so much, David. We'll talk to you soon. Meanwhile, everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes, and I'm thrilled that you could be with us today. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, we're going to be talking with Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer. He's going to come in to talk about some of what he has been learning in the field of consciousness and awareness and all of those things. He's actually pretty extraordinary. He's a criminal attorney who is descended from very, very excellent mediums. And he himself is a terrific evidential medium. But he's interested in the intellectual aspects of what's going on a lot more than many are. He's going to be presenting at the Afterlife Research and Education Symposium, which is September 15 to 17, 2017 in Scottsdale. And if you're listening to this in a future year, don't go, darn it, it's probably gone by. Because there's probably another one coming up for you. Just go to afterlifestudies.org and you'll see what we're up to now. But meanwhile, I really, really recommend that you just join us next week and learn a little bit more about what Mark Anthony is going to be talking about at the symposium. And this week, for the second time, we've been enjoying conversing with David Burfoot. His book is Fighting the Elephant, and it rocked my world. And as I went through it again for today, it rocked it a second time. Like you and me, he has been seeking reality. And like us, he's known instinctively that there had to be materialist science and spiritual studies coexisting because they're both in the same place talking about the same stuff. But he has done extensive research, much more than I really had the patience to do, and he gives it to you in very simple ways so you really get it, and so it does astonish you and open you and make you very, very much more aware of what's going on and make you want to learn more. Physics, biology, parapsychology, spirituality, consciousness, afterlife studies, everything comes together and is part of one gigantic area of study. Finding the Elephant is a groundbreaking book. I really hope that if you're interested in this area at all, Finding the Elephant is going to be where you begin. As you know, not my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and The Fun of Living Together. And I have novels too, but I'm mainly, right now we're concentrating on the nonfiction. You can order these books through bookstores or on Amazon, and they're available as audiobooks, all of them, and in 34 languages worldwide. If you want to talk about any of my books, or if you have a question, or if you just want to talk about anything at all, don't hesitate to try to reach me. All you have to do is go to robertagrimes.com, go to the contact block, send me an email. Make sure you give me your own email address back correctly, because I will answer. You used to be able to say, if you don't hear in 24 hours, send flowers. Sometimes it takes me 3 or 4 days, but I do answer every message. If you haven't heard from me and you did send me a message, send it again, because probably I got your email address wrong. Past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net, on iTunes through the Seek Reality app, which is available for free in the iTunes store, and on Dream Vision 7 Radio. If you ever want to know where I am, just go to my website and click on the radio tab. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.